Okay, great. And I'm going to. Okay, I'm going to just mute everyone and introduce Fia. Okay. All right, so it's definitely my pleasure to introduce you, Fia Cruci, a man who has never been hospitalized nor taken any medication in his life, including aspirin. He is the third son of macrobiotic and natural foods pioneer Michio and Aveline Cruci. And he's been I got to know him over the past couple of months, and his story is remarkable, and I'm excited to hear it once again today. And he is the creator of the Macrobiotic Miracle Conference Calls. So thank you so much for sharing your story, Sia, and whenever you're ready to begin.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Marissa. Thank you for hosting tonight, for being my stand-in as I give my story. And thank you to all of you who are listening in. I really appreciate your listening and your interest in microbionics. I think it's really wonderful. And I hope this call can give you some inspiration as well as any of the other calls that you might want to join in the future. I have a story, and I used to not think that I had a story because all these years of meeting many macrobiotic people, a lot of them came in because got involved in macrobiotics because of health reasons, some of them extremely serious, and they were able to turn it around. And so for many, many years of growing up and being involved with macrobiotics, I would hear these wonderful, amazing stories that were quite inspiring. And as I got involved in macrobiotics professionally, I kept thinking, you know, I don't have a story. You know, what do I say in front of an audience to inspire people? I'd never transformed my life. I was never really sick. I never really had this amazing recovery. And then it dawned on me, well, actually, I do have a story. My story is exactly that I never got sick, that I never had any major health issue, that I even never been hospitalized or had any medications. So when I realized that, I started to put together a story, a brief introduction of who I am, so that I could, you know, get up in front of groups and share myself and introduce people to what I do and what my life is about, which is really about microbiotics. I'm going to give you my short version of my story that I've given repeatedly many times, and it goes like this. I start off saying I am 50 years old, and I was born in New York City and grew up in the Boston area, and for all intents and purposes have a normal, regular American upbringing, aside from the fact that I had unusual parents. And that I have never had any red meat in my life. I have never had any chicken in my life. I can't, if somebody asks me, or somebody says, oh, that tastes like chicken, I can't relate to that at all. Because I've never had any chicken at all. I have never had a glass of milk in my entire life. Never had. Even though I went to regular public schools, never had a glass of milk. I have had dairy products. I've tried cheese and other things, butter, things made with dairy, ice cream, etc., but never a straight glass of milk in my entire life. So I would say that first I would introduce myself like that and say the things that I never had, and then I'd say, well, now the flip side to that is that I've never been hospitalized and have never had any medications whatsoever, not even an aspirin. I have been to the dentist have had work done on my teeth, and so have had Novocaine and other things that you normally get in the dentist. But aside from that, I've never had any other kinds of drugs or medications, not even recreational drugs either. So that's how I would introduce myself and introduce my story. But tonight I'm going to go into a little more depth and in detail about my life and what it's been like being the son of Michio and Abilene Kushi. First, as I said, I was born in 1959, and as Marissa said, I am the third son of five children. The first was my sister, who was born in 1952, and then I had a brother born, I'm sorry, 53, and then a brother born in 54, and then the next brother born in 56, and then me in 1959, and then my youngest brother was born in 65. And my father came to the United States in 1949. He came from Japan. The war ended in 1946, and he was a student at Tokyo University, a political science student. And he was, because of the war, he was interested in peace. He was interested in world government and creating peace, and he was involved with a group called the World Federalists at the time. After the war ended, there was a lot of discussion as to how to create world government and through a world federalist organization, how to stop nuclear war in the future, and my father was heavily involved in that, in that organization. The vice president of that organization was Norman Cousins. And there were many other writers, intellectuals, thinkers, politicians. Albert Einstein was a member of that group, and many other people. Some of the people who created the atom bomb were part of that group. President Nehru of India was part of that group. There are many, many people involved in this effort to try to prevent a future world war. So Norman Cousins actually came and visited Japan to see the destruction of the atom bomb, and being a world federalist, my father got to meet him, and Norman Cousins actually sponsored my father to come over to the United States and to further his studies at Columbia University. So in 1949, my father was able to come at the invitation of Norman Cousins. At this time in Japan, my father was introduced to another Japanese world federalist. His name was George Osawa, who is considered the founder of the modern macrobiotic movement. George Osawa was very much involved in peace. In fact, throughout the war in Japan, George Osawa was a very vocal anti-war protester, and he was so vocal that he got thrown in jail for his anti-war activities. He saw very clearly that Japan was destroying itself, and he was trying to stop Japan from continuing its war effort. Actually, at one point, a story goes that George Osawa actually tried to go to Russia to talk to the Russians to help stop Japan from continuing their war, and got caught, though, beforehand, and then was thrown in jail. George Osawa was an avid world federalist and interested in world peace and world government, and that's how my father met him. And George Osawa also was very interested in people's health, having recovered his own condition of tuberculosis by eating a natural traditional diet from Japan. And he was he had this idea that world peace is dependent on the health of humanity. And the health of humanity is dependent on the food we eat and keeping a natural diet that is in harmony with nature and the seasons and so on. And he developed the whole macrobiotic theory. But the real thrust of everything that he was doing was towards peace and towards to create world peace. And that was the idea that my father carried over when he came to New York City, to Columbia University, to further his studies in world government. In Columbia University, he got to actually meet with Albert Einstein and some of the other world federalists, and he was wondering about how we could really achieve it. And he said, he asked all of the people that he met who were involved in world government studies, he asked them, even if we were to create a world government, what is to stop people from fighting? What is to stop religions from fighting against each other? What is to stop families from, you know, fighting, economic classes from fighting, different races from fighting? All of these, what is to stop people from fighting? We'd have to have a massive police force just to keep the peace. What is it? What is it that, how do we really make it peaceful for everybody? He asked all of these people these questions, and nobody could answer that question, not even Einstein. They said, you know, that's the study of humanity. Nobody knows that answer, and nobody, you can't go to any school to learn that. And after hearing that and hearing all of those intellectuals, the smartest people in the world say those things, he decided, well, he must be in the wrong place to really study what the answer is for world peace. So he decided to stop going to school and study on his own what is humanity. So that I'm just giving you a background of my father. And so here he was in New York City, and he was writing back to George Sawa, and back home, George was had a little newsletter that would publish my father's article, and this newsletter was called World Government. And my mother was at that time studying macrobiotics with George Sawa, and one of her jobs, living with George Sawa, George Sawa had a study house. One of her jobs was to distribute this newsletter around, and she would read my father's article, and she fell in love with him by reading his articles. So she desperately wanted to meet my father and come over to the United States and help him in his effort to create world peace. So 2 years later, George Sawa sent my mother over to New York. At that time, travel was all by boat and Greyhound bus. And so my mother took the boat and landed in San Francisco, and just like my father did 2 years before. And she took the Greyhound bus across the country and met my father for the first time in New York City. And that's how they met. And my father, was throughout the 50s, he had various jobs. He helped this gift store, which is right now is very big and famous, the Takashimaya gift store. He helped get that started. He was the vice president and helped that get started in the 50s in New York City. And my daughter was born, you know, they got married, and they I had children, and I don't remember very well what life was like during that time, only from stories that my parents would tell me. But they did begin with George Sawa's help. They began some macrobiotic efforts. And they kept up with correspondence with everybody in Japan and macrobiotic friends around the world at that time. Then I was born in 1959, and George Sawa actually came to the U.S. At that time. I don't remember so much of those at that time at all. Later we moved to Martha's Vineyard at the invitation of a friend, a macrobiotic friend, and then we lived there shortly, and then my father wanted to go to Boston, actually to Cambridge. He wanted to go to Harvard University and talk to them. He felt that he should promote and teach macrobiotics at Harvard, which is what he did. He actually went. We lived and moved to Cambridge, and he started to teach in Harvard some Asian classes on macrobiotics. But the students at Harvard weren't so interested in what he was saying. So he decided that this was not, you know, what he didn't feel happy doing teaching that. But he did find that during this time there was a lot of the hippie movement was growing, and of course Timothy Leary was getting popular in Cambridge and Newton, and a lot of hippies were coming around, and a lot of people were interested in alternative and Eastern ideas, and they were interested in listening to Michio. So we started to get a lot of hippies coming over to our house, listening to my father talk. Many of them were Harvard students, but many of them were just people who were looking at new things. So we had a lot of strange people coming over. And then we moved later to Brookline, which is just a suburb outside of Boston. And that's where I started going to school. I started going to school at the Brookline Public Schools, and we had a large house there, and they opened it up to all these hippie students who were interested in studying macrobionics and studying how to chew brown rice and learn about yin and yang and all of these amazing things. They were interested in spiritual development and interested in getting high just by chewing brown rice and learning about all kinds of wonderful things that you know, peace and love and all of those things. So I was going to school, public school, and my experience there was I would my mother would pack lunches. Now, you have to remember, back then there were no whole foods, there were no organic farms, there were no grains at all. There were no the only place where we could get tofu was in Chinatown. We would eat millet by buying actual bird seed and separating the millet out. The grain, millet out from the bird seed, and then cook the millet. And my mother would go down to the farmer's market and get the leftover green tops from the, because they would always cut off the green tops from carrots and other root vegetables, and she would collect them all. And she would also go foraging in the parks for dandelion and other things, and go foraging for burdock root, and go foraging for even for seaweed up along the coast on the north shore of Boston. There was one organic farm in Concord, Mass. That we would go and visit and buy corn and other things, and it's still there, I think. But that was how we ate, very simple and very. It was hard to get things. But every now and then my parents would get things from Japan. They would get high-quality miso and other vegetables, other Japanese products, and we'd get those. They had started getting those a little bit earlier and started sharing those with all of our friends. So when I would go to school, my mother would pack me rice balls. First grade, second grade, third grade, they would pack me just two rice balls made of brown rice and nori seaweed and umeboshi plum in the middle. That's actually a fairly standard, traditional Japanese lunch, except for the fact that it's, instead of white rice, she gave me brown rice, and we used very traditionally made umeboshi plums and high-quality sea salt. And she would pack that in a lunch and a little thermos of bancha tea, twig tea, and I would bring that to lunch every day. And to me, they were absolutely delicious. They were a little bit on the salty side, and I think I ate a little bit too salty when I was young, but I loved them. And the food that I ate growing up was the most delicious food I ever had. But needless to say, being not only the only Japanese person, short guy in the school, and then on top of that eating this strange food, I was very shy during lunchtime and would often hide in the corner eating my lunch. And sometimes the students would come over and they'd ask me what I was eating. You know, they'd get their standard school lunch, They go through the line and get the tray and get the carton of milk and get the peas and the meat and the bread and then sit down. But I'd be there with my rice ball and nori seaweed, and they'd come over and they'd say, "Ooh, what's that black stuff?" And I say, "Oh, it's seaweed." And they go, "Ooh." I said, "Hey, you want to try some?" And would try to scare them off with that. Then I also I would point to their food and say, "Ooh, what's that?" And they said, "Oh, it's meat." And I said, "Ooh, meat, ugh, terrible." Anyways, I had fun, but what still was felt a bit out of place. In fact, the teachers were concerned that I with my food, and they noticed that I would be bringing just rice balls and tea for lunch, they started to get concerned. And I think it was in third grade that the teacher asked me to said that they were worried that I was malnourished, and they really forced me to buy a lunch. I was only in third grade, and I was crying, and I was in the line getting the lunch, and they called my parents up, and it was all a totally upsetting experience. And finally, my parents talked to them, and they had to give the excuse that it was for religious reasons that we ate this way, which was not true, but that was the excuse so that the school would back off. And fortunately, we lived in an area that was strong religious differences. There's a big Christian Science community that was very that don't do medicine, and there was a large, strong Jewish community in the area too. So there was a lot of had a lot of religious tolerance there. So so I was left alone after my parents gave me that excuse. And, you know, also during that time, you may remember that Wonder Bread was a big thing. We went to see a Wonder Bread factory, and it was all just white fluff going through this, and it's like, what is that? And then it was also the four food groups were being taught back then. Now, I did have binges. I did try the ice cream truck would come by, and after school, going hanging out in the park, and I did try ice cream. And did try some candies, like Three Musketeers or Snickers, whatever. And the funny thing was that I had a reaction right away. When I ate too much sugar or something like that, really strong, my lips would start to burn, would flare up, and I get a reaction right away. And I'd come home, and they would ask me right away, "What did you eat?" And I was like shocked that they knew that I ate something. And that was the first time that I realized they could see and that I could feel how food was affecting me profoundly, and how you could be seen on somebody's face. So I realized then that, well, I can't hide anything. and that it wasn't good for me either. So they told me they asked me, "What did you eat?" And I said, "See, don't eat sugar." That's what happens. So from then on, I was a lot more careful and really understanding that, that food definitely has a very powerful effect on what I eat, on my condition. So now I did have childhood diseases. I had mumps, measles, chicken pox, but how my parents took care of them is they used home remedies. They would give me like soft rice with an umeboshi plum. They would feed me that. They would feed me what's called umesho kuzu, the kuzu drink with umeboshi and shoyu. They would give me a mustard plaster. My father tried to give me, I think I had a real bad cough. He tried to give me a meat plaster. He bought some hamburger and you know, pounded it up and was going to put it on my chest. And that was the first time I saw meat in the house. And I was kind of shocked and was thought that was gross, and I didn't want it on me at all. Now, in the house, we had wonderful food. We had, you know, and over time, my parents created Erewhon Natural Foods, and through Erewhon, we were able to get a lot of wonderful grains and vegetables and wonderful products, natural products. We had all natural peanut butter. That was a big treat to have. Then we had friends who made whole wheat sourdough bread, and that was really wonderful too. So I stopped. I started bringing sandwiches to school, and started the food. My food started looking like the other kids' foods. You know, that was a lot of fun. Let's see. And at that time, the community was growing. My father was teaching regularly, and my mother was giving cooking classes in our home. So my home life was really fun and exciting. It was a lot of people, a lot of wonderful people there. One woman, she was experimenting, and she made natural homemade ice cream just from oatmeal and fruits. It was great, with an old ice cream maker that you, a hand crank ice cream maker, you pour the ice in and crank it, and just, and that woman was Rebecca Wood, who's now a famous natural foods, whole foods teacher, cook, and she's actually credited for helping to bring quinoa into this country. Enjoyed meeting many people, Ronald Koch, who is was a Maharaj teacher and is involved in the Steiner community now actively. He was there, and we traveled across country with him. A man named Evan Root was a wonderful man who gave me a first ride on a motorcycle. Paul Hawken was there. He's now renowned in the environmental community. Paul Hawken and Bill Tara, they helped start Erewhon. Or they helped get Erewhon going. There were restaurants. There were the East West Journal, and there are many, several houses. My mother bought like 14 houses in Brookline, and had students living in all of them. And all of them would work in the different businesses that were growing. And so, really, the whole movement really started from there. And a lot of it was my mother's enterprising effort. She was really behind it all. And I, in my teens, I had banana, first time, banana and tomatoes. I was always curious to know what bananas tasted like, because I, you know, eating tropical fruits was not a good, was never recommended, it was never in the house. But somebody asked me, have you ever had a banana? I said, no, never had a banana. I said, what does a banana taste like? And he said, it tastes like, it sounds, banana. So eventually I tried a banana. And, yeah, it's okay. But I also experimented with eating. I ate very simply for, like, 3 days and chewed my rice, like, did what's called this number 7 diet, and ate, just sat very quietly and in meditative pose, and took my rice and chewed each bite, couple hundred times, and I actually did start to feel very light and high and very floating, like very high, and although fine, very happy and very like inspired. It was really quite an unusual experience. I also got into coffee and got into beer and smoking cigarettes. But I never did any drugs at all. Later, I got married, and I found a woman of my dreams and married her. She was the daughter of a French yoga teacher who had invited my parents over to France, and very beautiful. And so I married very young. And then went to college, and but then because of the family, I had to stop and went to work, and worked in the macro businesses. Worked in Erewhon. I worked in a restaurant as a short order chef, and worked in a bookstore, and then worked in the organizations as a bookkeeper and in various functions, and eventually later on. running the Kushi Institute. I also, one of my sons actually had, when he was 1 year old, he had a problem and he had to be hospitalized. He had a B12 deficiency, which we're wondering why, because and the reason for this that I can see is that my wife came from a background of eating dairy food and getting her nutrients from dairy food, being raised in France. And she stopped all dairy, and she didn't eat any seaweed, much seaweed, and wasn't eating very wide. And there are a couple other factors, like being on the beach often and drinking sparkling water, other things that help leach out minerals from the body that cause that condition. But fortunately, we were able to help him, and he was able to get, and now he's fine. He's a wonderful, healthy, strapping guy. So really, when the lesson there that I learned was that when young mothers get pregnant and have children and are breastfeeding, that they really need to eat wide and eat whatever they crave, even if it is animal food and other things, because the baby needs that, and their body is telling them to have those things. Let's see. Throughout the community, I mean, some of the other interesting things that happened in the Boston community. Really, to me, the height of the Boston macrobiotic community was in the 70s and early 80s. Gloria Swanson was actively involved. Gloria Swanson is a silent screen star. If you don't know who she was, she was the first, before Marilyn Monroe, before Madonna, before, she was a woman who pioneered that whole being a superstar. That was Gloria Swanson, and she was macrobiotic. And through her, a lot of other people got involved, including John Lennon. And John and Yoko came over to our house in 1976. And later on, John Denver came in 1980. And John Denver was kind enough to give us private concerts, and it was wonderful. And then in the 80s, my father got more actively involved in cancer and health issues, and got involved with the AIDS community and began doing these free lectures and talks and cooking classes to the AIDS community, and started a whole AIDS research, which was actually quite successful and was published in the medical journal, The Lancet, showing how the diet was able to help AIDS patients recover their immunity. Now, in the meantime, also the community, they started the Kushi Institute, and they started the other organizations around the country and around the world. Friends started. The movement was growing. My brother, he pursued a career. The second brother just older than me, his name is Lawrence Kushi. He pursued a career in nutritional epidemiology and has become a renowned researcher in that field, promoting a lot of diet and disease-related studies. Now, later in the 90s, unfortunately, my sister got ill, and then my mother shortly after. And the reason that I attribute this is I believe that we became all too quite arrogant about ourselves, and in our arrogance, not watching ourselves, our food, and not watching our health as closely as we should. I was always one who always actually did watch my health in college, and throughout my years, I was always careful of what I ate, even though I did enjoy drinking and smoking. I was always very careful with what I ate, and conscious about the reactions that I had with food. Unfortunately, my sister, who I don't think she was quite so attentive, she got sick, very sick, and thinking that and not our family not was not one to initially reach out to conventional medicine. We don't run to the doctor to go see on any slight thing. And my sister was basically raised that way, so she never went to see a doctor or anything like that when she got sick. And but she did get very sick and was flown back, and she was living in Los Angeles. And my parents tried different food things, and I eventually said, you need to go to the doctor, and took us to see the doctor. And she, by that time, she had stage 4 cervical cancer, and so immediately began radiation treatments and other conventional approaches. And at the same time, my mother also, in a similar situation, had a similar problem. So it was a very, very tough time in the mid-90s. My sister, I think her disease was too advanced, and she actually passed away in 95. And my mother, though, through the careful attention of my father and the people living in the house, she was able to recover. Although she was disabled, became disabled by the radiation treatments, she was able to recover and lived until 2001. It was a tough lesson, and I think people need to understand that food is important, but you need constant vigilance in terms of what how you're feeling and the energy, but there are different indications that I personally use myself. Not only my bowel movements and my energy and my the physical indications, but also whether I'm happy, whether I'm living, doing what I like to do, doing what I enjoy, and whether I'm honest and truthful with myself. That to me is a big thing, because when you're honest and truthful with yourself, then you are attentive and know what's going on, and you can be attentive and fully present in the moment to yourself and everything else that's going on. And by being fully present, you're able to notice what is going on with you. So for me, that was a truly valuable thing to understand. All the philosophy, all the ideas, those things are good to understand and good to use as guidelines, but in the end, it all comes down to really being fully present and experiencing your life and knowing that every little thing that you do makes a difference. Every food that you, every bite you chew, everything you eat makes a difference. And the thing is, it's not to be afraid of anything, not to be afraid that this is going to hurt you or this is going to make you bad or anything like that, but to enjoy it and to enjoy this experience and to explore and experiment and to know what's best for you. Because once you know what's best for you and once you're able to manage your life, and, you know, who knows? I may get hit by a bus tomorrow or something might happen to me. I know what's going on, and I'm doing what I enjoy in my life, and that's really all that matters. So I think I'll end there.
That's very remarkable, Fia. The story is just really, really remarkable and so fascinating. How, you know, such a figure such as your father kind of came into play in his whole story and, you know, your experience with it. So thank you for sharing that with us. And your message, I think, is absolutely right. You know, it's you have to know what you're putting into your body. And you can't at any point think that you're unaffected by other things, you know, just because you were born with a really strong constitution and, you know, you have a head start, you know, things can always go wrong, and you always have to stay conscious on top of what you're doing day to day and live your life the best way you can and make the best choices that you can do each day. So thank you for that. I wanted to, well, what you commented way back before, I just wanted to say really quick about the rice balls that you used to eat when you were a kid. I've been getting a lot of questions about that, actually, and I've been recommending that often, and I wanted just to let everyone know on there that I'm actually posting that recipe on my blog, my website, that how to make rice balls for those of you who aren't familiar with it, and it's really simple, and it really is a great little thing to carry with you throughout the day, to take through as lunch, or a great pickup, and to check out my blog, my website, which is www.macromarinelli.blogspot.com. That's macromarinelli.blogspot.com. So thanks. So you can come back for that. And also, I also wanted to ask you, Fia, just something else you mentioned too, about the B12 deficiency. I know that, you know, commonly for people who don't eat meat, because that's one of the most important ways that you can get B12, but you said seaweed too. So you can get B12 from eating seaweed. Is that correct? And what's your...
It's not 100% certain, but I think you can, personally. I think, especially wakame, I think is that's a personal experience. It's not a clinically proven one, but it's what I think can... as well as for some fermented foods like natto and maybe traditionally made miso. So a lot of these, but if you have fish occasionally, I enjoy fish. I do eat fish. And you should be fine. Also, what's important is to have leafy greens, steamed, very lightly cooked. When I cook steamed greens, I only put them in for like 1 second, and keep them fresh and crisp. But steamed greens, salad, all of those things are helpful because you need both. You need the strong mineral and you need the strong, I'm going to say, yin upward energy, which is the greens.
Well, also, right before we get close to 9 o'clock, I do want to open it to a question and answer session right now. So for the remainder of the session, if you do have a question, please type 5-star on your phone, and I'll be able to see you doing this, and I can unmute you so you can ask your question. So are there any questions out there for Fia or anything else that you want to ask or comment on? So... no questions out there. So, I see one. Okay. All right. Would you like to introduce your? There you go. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, we can hear you. I can hear you.
Hi, Pia. My question is. My name is Isabel Carrasco. My question is, I'm calling from New York, and my question is, what is Micho concentrating on? What is he doing right now?
Well, I think he's semi-retired, and he's just kind of taking it easy right now. He has remarried, and he lives in Boston, and he lives a very quiet life now. So I think he is taking a well-deserved break.
Oh, is he writing or anything, or just...
not that I'm aware of. Just enjoying a quiet life in Boston.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. Thanks, Isabel. Right, I'm going to go on to the next question. This is Rosemary, I believe, had a question. Rosemary, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for that wonderful story.
Okay.
What I wanted to ask you was,
yes,
what's your favorite food?
I'm sorry?
What is your favorite food?
My favorite food? I would have to say that it is rice, brown rice, and cooked with, actually, I like this food, which a lot of people some people don't like or hate or won't go near because it smells bad, but some people really love. And I'm one of those people that really love it. It's called natto.
Okay.
And it's stringy, fermented soybean stuff from traditional food in Japan. And I love to eat it with my hot rice. Otherwise, I like noodles, pastas. I like mochi, which is the pounded sweet rice cake. I like corn on the cob. I like fish. I like sushi. I like sashimi, raw fish. I like salad, you know, fresh daikon, all different things. Yeah.
And how has your diet affected your children?
They grew up eating macrobiotically, and they are very strong, all of them, and very. My oldest son has been not only macrobiotic, but has mostly been vegan all his life, hasn't even had any animal food, not even fish. And he's very healthy, lived in New York City, very active, has a great life. I never have to worry about him. All of my children, they're all very healthy and all very take care of themselves. They don't need, they're all fine. My younger kids, they are experimenting a little bit with other substances, but you know that's hard not to stop them doing that in their teens. Yeah.
So, for you personally, what is the best gift that you've gotten from macrobiotics?
For me personally, aside from my good health. It is all the wonderful friends that I have around the world. I mean, literally, when my sister did a tally once, and of all the people that she knew, went through all the houses, and it was well over 10,000 people, just in our youth and in the growing up. So that was like, these are all people that I know and know me. Some of them, a lot of them, I forget who they are, but they remember me. They remember. And they introduce themselves sometimes on Facebook or whatever and say, oh, I used to live in your house. I remember you. So to me, that's wonderful, having all these wonderful friends. All of them are interested in this dream of peace and eating well.
Thank you so much.
Huh?
Thank you, Rosemary. I do want to take one more question we have here from Bobby, who's been waiting. Bobby, are you there?
Yes.
Yes,
thank you very much. You actually answered a number of the questions I had.
Great.
Excuse me?
Great, wonderful.
Oh, that's it? All right, well, then I want to move on to... No, hello? Oh, I'm sorry, I just muted you. Are you still there?
That's okay, because my question was whether or not we avoid the medical profession and medicine, et cetera. But my question is, going from the plant-based diet to macrobiotics, where would you send me first?
Do you have a serious health issue?
Diabetes.
Diabetes. Okay. Well, I would recommend that you see a where do you live? You live in New Jersey, I think?
In Delaware.
Delaware. Okay, well, there's a great counselor in Philadelphia. His name is Denny Waxman. I would recommend that you go see him for guidance, and he can outline a specific way of eating for you. If you can, the Kushi Institute offers a specific diabetes program. I think it's a weekend or extended weekend, which I think you'd benefit greatly from. And I think it's free. You just have to get yourself up there. Just look up KushiInstitute.org, and it should be there.
Okay.
Yes. So that's what I would recommend.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Bobby. And we have just one more final question from Annette, I see. Annette, are you there?
Yes, it's Annette. See, I just wanted to say thank you for being my friend, and thank you for telling your story. God bless.
Thank you.
All right.
Yes.
Well, that just about wraps it up. For any of you who did not get to answer your question, you can still ask by visiting the website, which is www.fiakushi.com/miracles/. And I'll spell that. That's Fia, PHIYAKUSHI.com/miracles, MIRACLES/. And you can write your question in the comment section, and Fia will be able to answer you through there.
I just want to mention also I'm on Facebook a lot, facebook.com/Fia, PHIYA. You can also message me there if you have questions.
Thank you. And thank you again, Fia, for sharing your really amazing story. It's just really great to, it's just so great to hear just what an icon, you know, it's coming from. So again, this call has been recorded, and it will be posted on the website, fiakushi.com/miracles. And I'm going to stop the recording now. And thank you all. So